Daniel is a very unusual book. It's a fascinating book. It's a book filled with history. Of course, it's a book in the Old Testament, but it has much to say about the New Testament and about the church. In that book, you'll find stories about lion's dens and fiery furnaces that we've known since we were children. But you'll also find visions and prophecies that are some of the most difficult to unravel in all the Bible, and some of the most beautiful. You'll find examples of faith and of conviction, of the power of prayer. A beautiful, fascinating book. And yet that book has been viciously attacked by modern scholars who doubt that it's authentic. And that's one of the things I want us to look at here this morning about the book of Daniel. Let's begin by asking the question, why was the book of Daniel written? Why do we have the book of Daniel? What did that book mean to its original audience? Well, let's think for a moment about what had happened to its original audience, those Jews who had been carried off into captivity. This was contrary to all of their expectations. God's chosen people had been uprooted from their promised land and transported into Babylonian captivity. But it should not have been unexpected to them. They should have expected that. They had been warned repeatedly that that would happen by Isaiah, by Micah, by Jeremiah, by all the prophets, even all the way back to Moses. They'd been warned about that. And in fact, 2 Chronicles 36, verse 16 tells us why they now found themselves in captivity. It says, "But they kept mocking the messengers of God, despising his words, scoffing at his prophets, till the wrath of the Lord rose against his people, till there was no remedy." That's why they were carried off into captivity. Jeremiah 5, verse 15 tells us who led them away into captivity. An ancient nation from afar, O house of Israel. An enduring nation. Jeremiah told them who would come and lead them into captivity. Well, how did the surrounding world see these events? I'm sure they saw it like the God of the Hebrews had been totally discredited. The mighty gods of Assyria and Babylon had conquered God's people and carried them away. I'm sure that's how the world saw it. But of course, the truth was just the opposite. Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, they were just serving God's purposes in punishing his people so that they would understand the things that they had done. And in fact, Jeremiah 25, verse 9 refers to the mighty King Nebuchadnezzar as the servant of God, doing God's bidding in punishing the people. The events in Daniel had a dual purpose. First, they were to convince the faithful Israelites, and there were still some faithful Israelites, Daniel and his friends, for example, to convince them that God had not forgotten them. It may look like God had forgotten them, but God had not forgotten them, and one day they would be vindicated. That was one purpose of Daniel. The other purpose of the book of Daniel is to show the pagan nations that it is God who is the true sovereign. God has preeminence. God has the power. And God is in control of the nations of this world. Those are the two purposes of this wonderful book of Daniel. What is the historical setting of Daniel? Where do we find ourselves in history when we come into the book of Daniel? Well, the book of Daniel opens with Nebuchadnezzar on the throne. After the deportation to Babylon of the Jewish nobles, of which Daniel was a part. This Neo-Babylonian Empire had begun in 626 B.C., 600 years before the birth of Christ, when the Chaldean chieftain Nabopolassar had captured Babylon and declared its independence from Assyria. Nabopolassar made an alliance with the Medes. We'll also hear about the Medes as we study the book of Daniel. And in 612 B.C., they captured the Assyrian city of Nineveh. The Assyrians and their allies, the Egyptians, were completely defeated by Nebuchadnezzar in 605 B.C. Nebuchadnezzar was the son of Nabopolassar. Nebuchadnezzar ruled for about 40 years. And after he died, his sons and his grandsons proved to be worthless. And a revolution in 556 placed an outsider Nabonidus on the throne. Nabonidus and his son Belshazzar, who we read about in the book of Daniel, were ruling jointly when Babylon fell to the Medes and the Persians, also described in the book of Daniel, under Cyrus in 539 BC. And in fact, Cyrus had been called by name in the Bible prior to his birth. God had called him by name to do this thing that he did here. After this, the Near East was ruled by a succession of Persian rulers, and then it was finally overthrown by Alexander the Great. The Greeks took over. After Alexander died, you had two main rules, the Ptolemies in Egypt, the Seleucids in Syria and Palestine. Eventually, Rome came in and took them all. That is moving through a lot of history in a very short period of time, but all of that history we find in the book of Daniel, written before it happened, prophesied and described before it happened in this book of Daniel. 600 years of history from Daniel to the Roman Empire we read about in the book of Daniel. Daniel talks about all four of those kingdoms. And in fact, Daniel talks about a fifth kingdom in Daniel 2:44, which is the church, the eternal kingdom, the everlasting kingdom, the kingdom of God. Daniel 2:44 talked about 600 years before it was established on the day of Pentecost following the resurrection. Now, there's a big controversy about Daniel, and that's what I want to spend most of our remaining time on here this morning. There are two views about when Daniel was written. Well, the first question is, why is it important when it was written? Well, it's very important when it was written, because faithful Christians understand and believe that Daniel was written before the events that it prophesied. So it's an example of prophecy in the Bible. But the liberal critics say, no, no, no. Daniel was written much later. It was written after the fact. They have to move it later, and we'll see why in a moment. It's very important that we understand the arguments on when Daniel was written, either back when it says it was written or much later in time. There are two positions. The early date position, which is, of course, the position I hold, and I'm sure all of us or most of us hold here today, is that the book of Daniel was written in Babylon in the late 6th century B.C. by the prophet Daniel, who had been taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, Daniel was written when it says it was written by the person it says wrote it, Daniel. The prophecies in the book are genuine. They're accurate. That's the early date position. But there is a late date position held by the liberal scholars. They say the book of Daniel was written in Palestine, not in Babylon. And they say it was written not by Daniel, but by some unknown Jew who we don't know who his name was. They say it was not written 600 years before the time of Christ, but it was written about 168 BC, they say, much, much later during the Maccabean period. They say the prophecies in the book that concern events prior to 168, well, they say those aren't prophecies at all because they'd already happened when it had written, when it was written. And they say the other things in the book, they say, oh, those are just guesses. And some of them happened and some of them didn't. So they take all of the prophecy out of the book and they say it is not a genuine prophetic book. So let's look at those two views. First, why is there a late view? Why does anyone take the late view? The book says it was written by Daniel. The book says it was written during the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Why would anyone say that's not true and adopt a much later view? Well, the answer is the liberal critics cannot have supernatural events in the Bible or in the world. They must explain it away. And unless they move Daniel 400 years into the future from when it was actually written, They have things they can't explain except by supernatural revelation from God. One author has written such amazingly accurate predictions that we find in Daniel defy the possibility of merely human origin. If these prophecies were composed in the lifetime of the 6th century Daniel, they would compel our acceptance of special revelation from God. That's why they must move it forward, because they will not believe in the special revelation from God. They approach the Bible with the assumption that the supernatural is impossible. And from that assumption, they must move Daniel forward in time beyond the prophecies that it gave. Let's look at the evidence, though, for the early view. And there is a tremendous amount of evidence for the early view. First, and most importantly, the testimony of Jesus Christ supports the early view of Daniel. Did Daniel exist? Was Daniel an historical figure? Jesus refers to him in Matthew 24, verse 15. So when you see the desolating sacrilege spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. And Jesus, in that chapter, goes on to explain it. Was Daniel a prophet? Did Daniel speak from God? Yes, Jesus calls him a prophet in Matthew 24, verse 15. Did Daniel predict specific events that occurred many years from the date in which he lived? Absolutely. Jesus mentions a prophecy of Daniel in Matthew 24, verse 15, that had not yet occurred even at that point, but that would occur during the lifetime of his listeners. Look at verse 34 of Matthew 24. Isaac Newton, who is, I think, probably the greatest scientist that ever lived. I'm sure you knew that. You might not also know, though, that he wrote commentaries on Revelation and Daniel. And Isaac Newton said, to reject Daniel is to reject the Christian religion. That's how important the dating of Daniel is. If we reject Daniel, then we must admit that either Jesus was mistaken about Daniel, or that the gospel records are hopelessly flawed about what Jesus taught. And either way, Christianity tumbles. The liberal critics, what do they say about what Jesus said? They discredit Christ as an authority on such matters, if you can believe it. One of them wrote, Christ neither would nor could be a critical authority. Can you believe that? What does the Bible say? Jesus has all authority, and that includes critical authority. Daniel 7:13 also is the main source of one of the messianic titles that Jesus repeatedly applied to himself, the Son of Man. That comes from Daniel. Jesus said that Daniel was a prophet, and Jesus said that part of what Daniel said was fulfilled after the Greek Empire, fulfilled during the time of Rome. Thus, the clear statements of Christ are in opposition to the liberal scholars. Who are we to believe? I'll side with Christ. Second evidence for the early date. Daniel is accurate regarding Babylonian history. Much of which the liberal scholars have not found out about until this century, in the preceding century, as they dig things up. And they're finding out how accurate the book of Daniel is. The historical accuracy regarding Babylonian history makes it difficult to believe, as they want us to, that the book was written 400 years after Babylon. How could a book written 400 years after the fact by some unknown Jew in Palestine be so accurate about what went on in Babylon? Daniel 4, verse 30 gives us a very accurate picture of Nebuchadnezzar's building activities. He says, and the king said, is not this great Babylon which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence and for the glory of my majesty? If you go to London today, you'll find something in the British Museum called the East India House Inscription. And on it there are six columns of Babylonian writing. And what does it tell us? It tells us of the stupendous building operations that Nebuchadnezzar carried out in building and enlarging the city of Babylon. How would a late author, 400 years after the fact, have known that Babylon's greatness was due to Nebuchadnezzar? Modern scholars didn't find out about it, apart from the Bible, until just recently when those inscriptions were unearthed. Nebuchadnezzar had Daniel's friends thrown into a fiery furnace. And yet, Darius the Mede had Daniel thrown into a lion's den. Why? Why didn't Darius use the fiery furnace? We found out recently why that was the case. Because Darius was a fire worshiper. They worship fire. They would not throw Daniel into the fiery furnace. They worshiped the fire. They threw him into a lion's den. That type of historical fact is hard to explain by someone writing 400 years after the fact. Daniel is accurate. Daniel uses the term Shinar to refer to Babylon in Daniel 1 verse 2. That term was no longer used of Babylon 400 years after the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel, in the book of Daniel, knew that it was impossible for anyone, even the king, to change the law of the Medes and the Persians once it had been promulgated. How did he know that if he wrote it 400 years after the fact? Daniel is accurate also regarding Nebuchadnezzar's lowly origin. This one is particularly compelling to me. If you look in Daniel chapter 4, toward the end, it ends with the following statement in verse 17. This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will and setteth up over it the basest of men, the lowliest of men. He's talking about Nebuchadnezzar, the king. Well, was Nebuchadnezzar a base, lowly? Yes. The lowly origin of Nebuchadnezzar's family was unknown to the secular world until they uncovered an inscription by his father, Nabopolassar, who referred to himself as the son of a nobody, the son of non-royal birth, insignificant, not visible, the weak, the feeble. That's how he referred to himself. This kind of knowledge about the lowly origin of Babylon's greatest king would have quickly been forgotten. Quickly been forgotten. But the author of Daniel knew about it. God knew about it. The decrees of the Babylonian kings in Daniel that we find there are remarkably similar to those found on those ancient monuments that we're now digging up. How would a Jewish writer writing 400 years after the fact have been able to reproduce such accurate inscriptions, such accurate pronouncements by kings that are so close to the inscriptions that we see? Here's another reason. The fourth empire in Daniel, I talked about there being four empires in Daniel. That fourth empire in Daniel is Rome, the Roman Empire that ruled the known world at the time of Christ, at the time the church was established. The visions in chapters 2 and 7 of Daniel speak of these four empires, these four kingdoms. Well, the late date group certainly can't have the fourth empire be Rome, because that would move it past the time when they say it was written. That would have a prophecy in there, and they can't have a prophecy in there. So they say the fourth empire is Greece, and the third is Persia, they say. The second are the Medes, and the first are the Chaldeans or the Babylonians. They split the Medes and the Persians up, because if they don't split the Medes and the Persians, then the fourth empire has to be Rome. So let's talk for a moment about that split of the Medes and the Persians. There is no evidence, none, that Daniel ever considered the Medes and the Persians to be separate empires. And there's ample evidence that he considered Medo-Persia to be a single empire, which it was. In Daniel 8, verse 20, we find a single ram with two horns, representing the kings of Media and Persia, but a single ram, a single empire. In 8, verse 21, the very next verse, a shaggy male goat with a prominent horn, that's Alexander the Great, tramples the ram, the single Medo-Persian empire. That's exactly what Daniel says. That's exactly what history tells us happened. Also in chapter 5, we read about the handwriting on the wall. You remember that. The last word written is Peres, P-E-R-E-S, which means to divide. But it's also a reference to Persia. It's also a reference to Persia. That is, Persia is depicted there as conquering the Babylonians, along with the Medes, which is exactly what happened under Cyrus. If we can show, and we can show, that that fourth empire is Rome, then all of the arguments by the liberals to take prophecy out of this book fall completely apart. If that fourth empire is Rome, then this book has prophecy in it. How do we know that? Because copies of Daniel have been found that predate the Roman Empire. We have them. So if that fourth empire is Rome, which it is, then there's nothing they can do to move it to that far in the future, because we have copies of the book that predate the Roman Empire. What do the liberals say about all this? Well, they say that Daniel was mistaken, because they say Daniel says Jesus would appear during the Greek Empire and Jesus appeared during the Roman Empire. Well, Daniel does not say Jesus would have come during the Greek Empire. He does not say the church would be established during the Greek Empire. He says those would happen during the Roman Empire, which is when they happened. That's what Jesus said too, Matthew 24. Right, speaking during the time of Rome. The Dead Sea Scrolls, they also support the early date view. You know, there was a lot of excitement when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. I think a lot of the excitement was that the liberals thought, aha, finally, we'll find the evidence we need to discredit the Bible. Didn't work out for them. Seven copies of Daniel, dating from the Maccabean period, have been found in three of the caves at Qumran. That makes it extremely unlikely that Daniel was written during the Maccabean period, that they would have seven copies of Daniel, of a book written contemporaneously at the time they were living out in the wilderness. How'd they even get them? The late date group is forced to believe that the Essenes at Qumran had near original copies of Daniel. They have to say that to keep their theory going. But a much simpler explanation is that they had copies of Daniel because Daniel had been written 400 years earlier, along with the other books of the Old Testament that were also found in those caves at Qumran. An honest scholar would accept the clear evidence of the Dead Sea Scrolls, but the modern scholars do not. They cannot. They literally are unable to believe their own eyes, because to do so would mean to accept the supernatural prophecies in the Bible. The book of Ezekiel supports the early view. In Ezekiel chapter 14, verse 14 and verse 20, Daniel is listed with Noah and Job as examples of righteousness by his own contemporary, Ezekiel. Ezekiel knew Daniel. Ezekiel listed Daniel as an example of righteousness. How could he have done that if Daniel was not born, or the person that wrote Daniel was not born until 400 years after this time? Ezekiel 28, verse 3, he says, "Behold, you are wiser than Daniel." Ezekiel knew that Daniel was wise and could interpret dreams. This representation of Daniel from Ezekiel fits perfectly with what we read in the book of Daniel. But what do the liberal critics say? They say, oh no, Ezekiel was not referring to Daniel. He was referring to Dan-El, a famous character from Ugaritic mythology. Does that make any sense at all? Any sense at all? That Ezekiel would talk about Noah, talk about Job, and then talk about a famous character from Ugaritic mythology? No. Ezekiel was talking about Daniel, the same Daniel that wrote the book of Daniel, that wrote the book of Daniel 600 years before the time of Christ. Josephus supports the early view. You know Josephus as a historian, widely quoted, contemporary of about the time of Christ, a little earlier. In his Antiquities of the Jews, Josephus relates a fascinating story about an event in the life of Alexander the Great around 330 BC, long before, they say, Daniel was even written. Here's what Josephus tells us. He says, Alexander was angry that the Jews would not give him their allegiance, so he went to Jerusalem to punish them. And believe me, when Alexander the Great showed up at the city gate, it's time to get a little nervous. He didn't have a record of too much diplomacy. The Jewish priest met him at the gate, according to Josephus, and showed him the book of Daniel. And they showed them how Daniel said Alexander would defeat the Persians. They showed him in the book of Daniel, the prophecy of Daniel, that said Alexander would defeat the Persians. And that pleased Alexander so much he spared Jerusalem. That's what we find in Josephus. History confirms that Alexander the Great marched near Jerusalem on his way to Egypt. and that he treated the Jews kindly. Why did he do that? Josephus tells us why he did that. Because he was shown the prophecies of Daniel that had been written long before he was born and were written long before the liberal critics say that Daniel was written. Well, how do the liberal critics explain that one? They reject what Josephus wrote. In fact, they reject Josephus whenever he contradicts their naturalistic worldview, but they enthusiastically accept him on everything else. They never give the Bible the benefit of the doubt. It's assumed to be wrong from the start, and they reject Josephus when he disagrees with their theories. One more on evidence for the late view. The use of a two-horned ram, I mentioned that earlier, to symbolize Medo-Persia supports an early view. Well, why? Why does that symbol to depict Medo-Persia support an early view? Because after Alexander the Great visited Egypt, much, much later, he was forever depicted on coins with his head adorned with the ram's horns of Amun-Ra of Egypt. From that point on, 1,000 years later, Muhammad called Alexander the Great the Lord of the Two Horns. One commentator wrote the following. He said, "It is impossible to believe that the writer of Daniel could, in the face of universal attribution to the two ram's horns to Alexander, represent Persia, the power he overthrew, as a two-horned ram, unless it was written before Alexander went to Egypt." That's the only explanation. And that's when it was written, long before Alexander went to Egypt. Well, let's look now at the other side of the coin. Let's look at the late date arguments and see if they hold any water, because they've got some arguments. Let's look at those. The first argument you'll hear from any late date person is that Darius the Mede never existed. Daniel 5, verse 30-31. "That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. That's what the Bible tells us. The liberal critics say, "Nope, wrong, missed it. Darius the Mede never existed, and Daniel just got it wrong." That's what they say. They say that the author of Daniel believed that a Median kingdom under Darius conquered Babylon and then later gave way to the Persians under Cyrus. Yet we know from history that Babylon fell directly to Cyrus and the Persians. Therefore, Daniel got it wrong. Darius the Mede never existed. Well, what's going on here? Let me give you 5 reasons why that argument doesn't hold any water at all. First, the book of Daniel never claims that Darius was king of the Medians, but only that he was of Median descent. To say that Napoleon was a Corsican does not say that Napoleon was king of Corsica. It just tells you where he came from, and that's all that it tells us about Darius, of Median descent. Second reason, the author of Daniel says that Darius and Cyrus had different ancestries. Not that they had separate kingdoms. It says Darius was a Mede, Cyrus was a Persian. It does not say that Darius ruled the Medes and Cyrus ruled the Persians. It does not say that. It says they had separate ancestries. If these liberal critics would just read the book of Daniel, it would solve a lot of their problems, I think. Reason number 3. In Daniel 6, verse 12, Darius is asked, "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days anyone who prays to any god or man except you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?" How did he answer? How did Darius answer in Daniel chapter 6? He said, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians." If the author of Daniel thought Darius ruled the Medes and Cyrus ruled the Persians and never the two shall meet, why is Darius talking about the law of the Persians, the Medes and the Persians? Daniel understood that it was a unified kingdom, Medes and the Persians. And that's what it says in Daniel chapter 6. 4th reason. Daniel's interpretation of the handwriting on the wall in chapter 5 that we talked about a moment ago indicates that the Persians would be the main element in the empire that succeeded Babylon. That's exactly what happened under Cyrus. And the fifth reason, the vision in chapter 8 that we also talked about a moment ago depicts Medo-Persia as a single ram with two horns, Medes and the Persians, but two horns from the same ram, the same kingdom. Daniel is very clear on this point. Medes and the Persians were a single empire. The law of the Medes and the Persians in Daniel chapter 6. The liberal critics have to split the two apart, because if they don't, then Rome is the fourth kingdom, and they cannot have that. So they split them apart, and they say Daniel split them apart. Daniel did not split them apart. Just because the name Darius the Mede has not been found in any ancient inscriptions yet does not mean that he does not exist. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. The critics made the same claims about Belshazzar, and they were proved wrong when his name was found on ancient inscriptions. They made the same claim about Sargon, and they were proved wrong when his name was found on ancient inscriptions. And I say one day they'll be proved wrong with Darius the Mede. Don't bet against the Bible. You'll lose every single time. Who then was Darius? Well, Darius the Mede was probably an early governor of Babylon that Cyrus had put in charge of that Chaldean empire that he had conquered. Cyrus didn't want to hang around. He had other things to do. So he put Darius in charge while he went off and conquered others. It's a well-known practice of Cyrus, history tells us, to appoint Medes to high positions to keep the governments unified, the Medes and the Persians. He was a Persian, so he would appoint his governors from Media to keep the government unified. And that's what happened here. And that's who Darius the Mede was. The language in Daniel is very interesting. And the liberal critics point to that language to claim a late date. Of course, we read it in English. But it was not written in English. Written in two languages, Aramaic and Hebrew. And in fact, Daniel 2 verse 4 through Daniel 7 through verse 28 is written in Aramaic. And the other parts are written in Hebrew. Now, it's been claimed that the form of Aramaic that was used was a 3rd century Aramaic, not a 6th century Aramaic, and therefore they say, aha, that's evidence it was written much, much later. Guess what? That argument fell completely apart when inscriptions were uncovered. In 1929, a farmer discovered what was later called the Rosh Shamra tablets digging around in his farm. He found these old tablets, and they were written in Aramaic, and they date all the way back to 1400 B.C., much earlier than Daniel was written. And they're very similar to the Aramaic we find in Daniel. So suddenly another one of the liberal arguments went completely away when they dug up some evidence. Well, why were two languages used to write Daniel? First, it's not unique to Daniel. Portions of Ezra were also written in Aramaic. But I think the reason two were used is that they had two audiences. We've already talked about the two audiences, right? One was the Hebrews, and the other were the pagan nations. And in fact, I think that's why we have two different languages. Portions are directed more to the Hebrews to encourage them, and the other portions are directed more to the pagan nations to let them know that God is sovereign and that God is in control. It's interesting that the Hebrew part of Daniel contains no Greek words at all. That seems very odd if Daniel had been written after nearly 200 years of Greek rule, as the liberal critics would have us believe. The political terms in the book of Daniel are largely Persian terms, which one would expect if this book had been written during the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Now, the liberal critics claim that those Persian words, though, indicate a late date. They say that if you look in the Hebrew and also in the Aramaic, you'll find some words of Persian origin. And they say that did not really penetrate Aramaic until long after the time of Cyrus, and therefore was written much later. They say, for example, the Persian term satrap is used throughout Daniel as if it were a Babylonian title, but it's really a Persian word. And they say, aha, that's evidence it was written much later. Well, first, it's possible that it was already a Babylonian title due to Persian influence. But another more likely explanation is that the book was not written during the time of Nebuchadnezzar. It was written during the time of Cyrus. It was written much later during Daniel's life, during when Persia was in power. And so Daniel likely used the current Persian terms to describe what had happened in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. And in fact, this argument can be turned against the late date crowd. The first Greek translations of Daniel appeared around 100 BC. And you know, many of those Persian words in those Greek translations were mistranslated. They got them wrong. We now know from other evidence that they got them wrong, that they mistranslated them. And that seems a little odd if the book had been written just 60 years earlier, as the liberal critics say. Clearly, the words had been forgotten. They'd changed their meaning since the time Daniel was written, which points to an early date for the book of Daniel. Well, the liberal critics also say, oh, Daniel also uses Greek words. And they say that also shows it was written much later. Well, let's look at that. Daniel 3, verse 5 contains three Greek words. All of them are musical terms. They're musical terms. Now, it's claimed by the liberal critics that such words could only have been used after Greek influence spread throughout the world, and that means it was much later, after the time of Alexander the Great. How much cultural spread do you need to learn three new words? There are three words here. There are 20 Persian words and only three Greek words. Does this make sense if Daniel had been written during the Greek Empire? By the time the liberal critics say that Daniel was written, Greeks had been ruling for over 160 years of Greek rule. And how many Greek words do you find in Daniel? Three. And they're all musical terms. One author has said it is the fewness of the Greek words, coupled with the fact that they are only the names of musical instruments, that must prove fatal to the critics' theory that the book was written in 165 BC. And anyway, experts now agree that Greek culture had penetrated the Near East long before the Neo-Babylonian period. The terms may have been introduced by Greek traders who brought those musical instruments and told them what they were named and introduced those Greek terms. And in fact, if you look at the Elephantine Papyrus, which is a 5th century Aramaic document, it also contains Greek words. And again, it's significant. They're all musical terms. Those are the kind of words that frequently come into a culture foreign. In fact, those of you who know music know there are a lot of terms that came from foreign languages, and that we use the foreign language to describe the musical term. And that's what was going on here. Let's talk about the position then that we've talked about this morning. There are two views, the early view and the late view. The early view says Daniel was written 600 years before the birth of Christ by Daniel. And it talks about the kingdoms that would arise, the Babylonians, the Medes and the Persians, the Greeks and the Romans. And it describes them in great detail, all before they came into being. And it is a beautiful, incredible example of the prophecy of God, showing history and how it came to be that Christ came into the world at the perfect time, when Rome ruled the world and when there was freedom of travel and people could spread the gospel throughout the world. That was the plan of God. And we see it in the book of Daniel, written 600 years before the fact. And then there's the late view, that it's all just a fraud. That Daniel didn't write Daniel. That Daniel never existed. And the book of Daniel was written 400 years after the time of Nebuchadnezzar. And that anything it talks about in this period, it's just talking about history, it's not prophecy. Anything it talks about the future is just a guess. And most of the time it guessed wrong. That's the other view. And we've looked at the evidence for the early view, and we've looked at the evidence for the late view. I think any honest person looking at this must come down on the early side. If that's the case, why do the liberals continue to support the late date view? And the answer is because they must. Because if they moved it over here, they would have to believe in a loving, personal God who knows what's going to happen and who tells us what's going to happen. And they have to believe in the power of prophecy, the power of prayer. They have to believe in all of those things. and they cannot and they will not. And so they close their eyes and move the book 400 years beyond the time when it was actually written. Now, we've managed to talk a lot about Daniel without really talking about the book of Daniel yet. We haven't even started with the first verse. And I've taught Daniel two or three times, and if I were to be teaching it here, my next class would be verse 1. But I will tell you there's a lot of material, including a complete commentary on the book of Daniel, available at the website, thywordistruth.com. And I have some brochures on the website, which I'll give to you, anyone that's interested, after our class here today, that lists what's available there. There's also a complete series of lessons, both audio and written, on the book of Revelation that I just taught at the Katy congregation. This fall, I guess in just 2 weeks, my dad, who's here also, Jess Hall, will be teaching the book of Isaiah at Katy, and we will have audio and video posted of those lessons, all available on the internet. I do a lot of work on the internet site, and I get emails from all over the world every week from people asking questions and reading the material there. There is no more cost-effective way to spread the gospel than through the internet right now, and you get people who are looking and searching, and they type in their Google web page a question. And we should always pray that what comes up will be the truth. And that's part of our responsibility, to make sure that what comes up is the truth. I thank you very much for your attention here today, and I hope you've been edified and blessed by the study of this beautiful book of Daniel. Thank you very much.